For Macca's Little Wins app. Triple M rocks footy. This is the Sunday Rub.
For Ream Hot Water Heaters. If your hot water needs replacing, accept nothing less than Australia's best. Install a Ream.
Triple M football here at Etihad Stadium on a Sunday afternoon today. It's Geelong and Essendon to battle it out. 3:20 start we've got here today. Our guest today, Nathan Jones, shortly Matthew Boyd from the Bulldogs will join us. We'll also speak with James Gwilt from the Essendon Football Club and Simon Lloyd. And if you're wondering, from Geelong, Director of Coaching down there at Geelong Footy Club. It's welcome the team on this Sunday afternoon. Jay ZJ Clark is with us. Wayne Swass, of course, three-time best and fairest, is also with us. Wayne Carey is also with us. Four-time best and fairest, I'd reckon, at a guess. We welcome you all. Good afternoon, Swatter.
Hey, Brian. Cats against the Bombers. They'll need to cash in today, boys, because the Adelaide Crows just cleaned up last night at home and boosted their percentage through the roof.
Yeah, good point, Swatter. It's been an interesting round, and we spoke about it a lot on Friday night footy and saying that it was so important that those sides had good wins, and that's no disrespect to the teams they were playing, but if you want to finish in that top four, it was imperative, and the same goes here today for the Cats. They need a massive win because the Crows have now gone 8% more than Geelong, which before this round, it was 0.1 different, so it's been a massive round.
So as a player, do you keep an eye on the scoreboard? So the Cats today, they're up by 10 goals in the second half. Are they...
You have to keep the foot to the pedal.
We'll chat with the...
Metal, I mean.
Assistant coach Simon Lloyd later on, because it'd be interesting structurally from a coaching point of view, whether you just try and open the game up or take some risks, make some changes to your structure specifically to try and pile on 18 goals or more.
None, and you know why. There's four games to go. So a little bit of percentage now, or think about percentage, there are four games to go. So you know what overrules percentage?
What? Wins.
Wins or losses.
Yeah, but that's just if they've already wins, got the game in their
if
keeping.
If you win all the games, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it's a percentage
what if the
battle
side
now
you're battling to finish in the top four wins all the games
right,
too,
but
then
what
percentage
happens
does
if you win by 50 points today and then you win by 100 next week? Don't worry about it today.
Well, you can't tell me you're playing a weaker opposition and you are up by...
If you're in the position to crush them, crush them.
Yeah.
But you may not be.
But
don't worry about it. Just win the game first.
Absolutely. That's the first priority.
Mm.
But from a coaching perspective, don't you set up that way in the second half so that you can do damage on the scoreboard because you can coach conservatively.
Set up to win.
Get the game on your terms, and then if it presents itself through the course of the game,
you lie home in your bed dreaming up these little scenarios and you think this is reality. This is not reality, mate.
This is
reality is win or lose first.
No, once you've
got the game. And then if you are in a position...
Jay, read the temperature of the room today is my advice to you.
Has anyone got some cantaloupe?
He's a bit bristly.
Just got to watch the temperature gauge.
Why so bristly?
Right,
what else you got?
In the top four...
Is that the best?
Well, in the top four, boys, there's Sydney, Adelaide, GWS. There's a massive chance the Cats could be travelling first week and or finish fifth or sixth so they don't get that trouble chance. Percentage is critical, as you say, Doug.
Yep, I'm with you.
Foot to the floor, boys. Open up. Kick goals. Take some risks today, next week, the week after.
So why would you take risks and potentially lose the game? You win the game first and then you take the risks.
No, this is if in the second half you're up by 8 to 10 goals.
Third quarter.
Oh,
end of the third quarter, fourth quarter, yep.
Yeah, in the second half.
Not at
half-time. You can change your setup.
The reality is the Cats should set up how they would normally set up, BT. You're right.
That's quite right.
And if they're good enough and they will smash the Dons today anyway.
Yep. So Adelaide didn't go out last night expecting to win by 40 points. But as the game unfolded, you start to sense, hang on a minute, there's a big kill on offer here. We'll put the foot to the throat, as Doug
said.
Play
aggressive.
Yep.
Exactly, Schwatter.
Yep.
But you don't change your structures and everything just to suit your little bit of a percentage gain, Josie. That wouldn't be in a coach's mind at all. If it opens up, it opens up.
Do you whiteboard these ideas, Jay-Z, when you're at home and you can't sleep?
We'll talk to Simon Lloyd about it later and we'll see who's right, BT.
All right. North Melbourne, the Western Bulldogs last night. Great effort by the Dogs.
BT, I thought last night with the injuries that the Bulldogs had once again had to deal with during the course of the week, Duck, that the Kangaroos would win. I didn't think it would be comfortable, but I thought that the talent that the Kangaroos had on offer would have been too much for the Bulldogs. I walked away from that game last night, Jay-Z. You were here working as well. They are a ballistic football team. Their pressure was unbelievably good. And what was really obvious for me late in the game was they are fitter they were so much fitter than the Kangaroos were late in the game because their willingness to work both ways in transition. But then when they got the ball off half back, from it was the same as in the first quarter. They catapult themselves en masse at incredible speed, and it was an amazing performance, and I'm so happy for the Bulldogs, but equally I'm disappointed for the Kangaroos.
Yeah, they won't be denied the Bulldogs. I saw them against the Cats last week, and they were as brave as I've seen of any team this year, given what they've gone through and the injuries, and then the injuries they suffered on that night. And I always thought, look, I'd tip the Kangaroos, given, you know, they'd won the last couple, and the Bulldogs' injuries. But I think we said last Friday night, BT, as well, that, you know, this club, they were always going to, they always give effort. Mm. And they, like I said, they won't be denied. So they're always going to beat teams that don't come prepared to put their body on the line or go as hard as they go. And I don't think there's a team that go harder than the Bulldogs.
And I think what it also said last night about the opposition in North Melbourne is they are real pretenders. They
You've have, said this all season.
They have lost, what is it, they've won two of their last eight games.
Against?
Which in itself, when you think about it, leading into a finals campaign, how do we even rate them to be a finals contender, given they have won two of the last eight games?
Well, they won
have
nine in a row.
This year, only, yes, they what, Jay?
They won nine in a row, their first nine.
Oh, yeah. And who did they beat in that nine in a row? They have won, they have beaten two sides in the top eight. And in the first three rounds, one of those wins came against Adelaide in round one. I wipe off the first three rounds because anyone can beat anyone, right? And then the other win was against the Western Bulldogs earlier in the year. They haven't beaten anyone.
No. Got a big
and we
three.
Keep rating them. Why do we keep rating them? They have got too many outside players. They've got too many soft players. They've got a couple of hardies in there. But they've got too many players that don't get down and dirty.
Got a big 3 weeks coming up to lead into the finals, Brian. The Kangaroos. Three big matches. I think it's Hawthorn.
Yep.
The Giants. And who's the other one?
Giants is in the last
Sydney.
Round. Sydney.
Yep.
Hawthorn, Sydney, Giants. That's a
tough.
It's a big three. And they could lose. Well, in current form, they lose all three of those.
Which will mean they've won two of their last 11 games, if that were the case.
Yeah.
I mean, and we just, for some reason, we keep talking to them about them being great finals contenders.
No, I don't think people have been saying that for a while, BT.
I think at the start of the year, they recruited as if they were going to win a premiership.
Yeah, and I think you've been very bullish on the fact that you didn't think that they could win the premiership. And I was probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, I thought the same, Swatter. Mm. And you know what? I think they gave us all a little bit of hope over the last couple of weeks. Mm. You know, Drew Petrie back into a little bit of form against St Kilda and a few others and starting to get a couple of players back from injury. But it just goes to show you that last night they're a fair way off it. And it is down to, I believe, down to a race of five for the premiership. And I'm keeping the Bulldogs in there purely because of what they did last night, and they just won't be denied. They'll win a final this year, I reckon.
Third best side in, I reckon, Hawthorn, Sydney, and then the Dogs.
Do you?
Thereabouts. Maybe Adelaide.
Imagine if the Dogs had a full, full complement to pick from. Yep. They would be a serious contender.
Matty Boyd's online, of course, former Dogs skipper, is joining us now. Matty, congratulations on the win last night. You must have been delighted.
Yeah, it was a great effort, really. I mean, I've heard you boys talk a little bit this morning or this afternoon about the effort that we put in and the intensity, and that's what we base our game on. So we know that if we bring that each week, we're a pretty good chance against anyone.
Matty, where does that come from? I mean, clearly it's you know, you guys, you're a past leader of this footy club, and you know, you've got young leaders that are now leading, your captain's out of the team. Where does that effort come from? Because we look at other sides and the inconsistencies in that effort, but you guys bring it every week.
I think what it really comes down to is, the care and the respect we've got for each other as a playing group. We just want to play for each other and do the right thing by our teammates, and I think that's where it's all based from. So as long as we've got that, I think the effort and the intensity will be there.
And Boydie, don't worry about the young blokes. You and Dale Morris are absolutely flying. Had sensational seasons, but I'm intrigued by what happened with Marcus Bontempelli last night, because North absolutely went after him, and he stood up, and the rest of the teammates, the team rallied around him. Did you know that was coming, and did Luke Beveridge talk about the physical targeting that would likely happen last night from North Melbourne?
Oh, we didn't really talk about it, but we, you probably had a suspicion that it might have might have been on the cards. You know, they wanted to rough up, I guess, what they consider our best player. And Bonty's been fantastic for us this year, but he just showed amazing resilience last night and a real, just a real grit and toughness to his game that I don't reckon many people had actually seen. We know it's in him because we spend every day with him, but not many would have seen how tough he is. But he showed it last night, that's for sure.
Boydie, well done individually and collectively last night. The importance of having your own standalone VFL team, because you've had so many injuries to deal with. You get Nathan Roback, who's played the last couple of weeks. Every player that seems to come in who's either been starved of opportunity or hasn't had many opportunities comes in and immediately knows the role and is able to execute it. So my question is, the importance of having your own standalone VFL team is probably underlining your ability to have those players come in and do the job from the get-go.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been crucial for us the last couple of years having that side and being able to learn the structure and the systems. I know a lot of people talk about, you know, structure and systems. It gets pretty boring for people who are listening to it, but it's so true. They play the style that we play at VFL level, never deviate from it. It really is about developing those young guys at that league. We want to, of course, we want to win games, and Footscray won a premiership in their first year in the VFL. So, you know, the aim is to win games, but the importance of being able to learn a style of play, play a role, and then come into the senior side and fulfil that role. It's huge for us.
Matty, do you think you can win it?
Oh, well, I think we've now locked ourselves away for finals, so that's the first step in it, isn't it? So yep. You've got to be there to give it a shake, and we've still got three pretty important games coming up, which will hopefully give us some, you know, momentum, will give us an opportunity to work on some things that haven't been quite right this year, but I think if we, you know, we put it all together at the right end of the season, which it's coming up to now, then we're a chance. And I think seven other sides in the finals would probably say the same thing.
What about Jong last night? Just an absolute tackling machine. Have I missed something? Is he always been like that? Because he was absolutely ferocious last night and landed some of the biggest tackles I'd seen for a while.
He's a hard unit, Jongy. He's really hard. And you probably saw... The thing that stood out for me from Jongy's game last night wasn't so much the tackling, it was the courage in the air. He went back with a flight a few times, and there was a 2v1 on the wing. He got kicked by us to Jongy, and it was 2v1 actually against. So he put his body on the line and took two of them out, hurt himself along the way. But yeah, his hardness is quite remarkable. Really, he's only still a very young man, and to do some of the things he did last night was huge for us.
I'll tell you what it is, Boydie. It's a young man that knows he's sort of on the fringe and you've got a lot of injuries. It's a young man wanting to play finals
hungry.
Footy. He's yep. hungry, exactly right. Mm. Hey, tell me, how much work do you guys do on your quick hands? Because I reckon that in
Excellent
close,
last night.
You guys have yep. the best hands in the competition.
I agree with that.
Oh, well, some of our development coaches would love to hear that because they put a lot of time and effort into our handball club, they like to call it. And we spend a bit of time during the week working on those quick hands. It's a crucial part of our game. Just trying to, I guess, get the ball from that inner ring of the congestion to the outer ring and get a clear kick away. So, yeah, it's pretty important. We place a lot of emphasis on it. And we have specific times that we do that stuff in a group. But the amount of work that the individuals put into that stuff is huge. So just, I'm glad it pays off.
So the handball club is a thing, is it, Boydie?
it's our little thing, yeah. Because, the handball club. Yeah.
Because it's the commentators often talk about
it. Is
that
for non-kickers, Boydie?
Yeah, it's an exclusive club, BT.
But you know, I've heard a lot of commentators say that's an actual skill that may have regressed a little bit or probably hasn't been as fine-tuned.
In tight like they do.
No,
I think it's improved dramatically.
Yeah, I think I've not seen a team do it as well as the Bulldogs, ever.
I think that, Boydie, I think it's something that's really improved in the last 20 years, that in-close, under-pressure handball, two or three quick ones to get it out, wouldn't you reckon?
Yeah, it's a really key part of our game, and you know, we place a lot of emphasis on it. And I think it's a lot about the decision making as well.
It's
all well and good to be able to execute the skill, but it's about that decision and the right option to give to. So we do a lot of short sighted games and match simulation breakdowns in training. So we get to replicate as much match-like decision-making as possible.
Hey, Matty, give us your take on how you think Tommy Boyd's going, and then also your thoughts on some of the criticisms that have been directed towards him.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? He's a young man. He's 20 years old. There's so much scrutiny, so much attention on him at such an early stage of his career. At times, I think it's a little bit unfair, given that we all take different lengths of time to develop. I thought his game last week was the best game I've seen him play, and it was outstanding. You know, his work around the ground, that was against Geelong. And some of the stuff that he does for the team, I mean, he's doing a really good role for us as a ruckman forward. It might not manifest itself in possessions and goals, but the role he's playing for us is crucial. So I think he's a really good young player. And I think in 2, 3, 4 years' time, we're going to see his full potential get reached. And that's when I think we should be judging him. And I think a lot of people out there in the media might think twice about what they say about him, because he's a young man. He's developing really well, and he's a great kid around the club. So I can't speak highly enough of Tom. I think he's a fantastic young man.
Buddy, don't give us the straight bet on this one. You must be keen to play again next season.
Come on, Buddy.
What do you boys think?
We all think you're flying.
I think you're absolutely flying. The top five best and fairest, without thinking about it, I reckon you'd give it a challenge. I just think you're absolutely flying. For a bloke who, a couple of years ago, we weren't sure if you were going to play again, I think maybe at the end of Brendan McCartney's last year, but I think yourself and Dale have just been playing great footy, and I'd be staggered if you weren't absolutely red hot on going again next year. So get Jason McCartney to work that deal out, pen in your hand, and get it sorted.
Thanks for the endorsement. I appreciate it.
Friday night footy next week, Boydie. Before we let you go, everyone in the competition will be watching you. Does it make a difference? And by the way, when do you play Essendon the week after? Jay-Z, who's sitting here with us, thinks that you should just throw out all structure and from the start of the game go for the percentage win. Could you set him straight what comes first, please?
Oh, it's always structure, boys. Come on, you know that.
Boydie, what happens?
Time, all that sort of stuff.
If BT doesn't have fruit before we go on air, he gets a little bit cranky. So we're going to get a big load of fruit in here and just straighten him out for a little bit.
Thanks, Boydie. Well done last night.
Good on you, boys. Cheers. Yeah,
very well done. I'm sick of it, Jay-Z.
We've got to the bottom of it. We know why BT's a bit bristly. And he's let it off. He's let it out. And hopefully it won't make any difference. No.
Anything could happen.
Often now, when you let that out, you sort of feel better. You've got it out of your system.
Before we talk Melbourne, and Nate Jones going to be our guest in just a couple of moments, North Melbourne, injuries, doesn't look good for them.
Not ideal, because we know Jared Waite's already out for probably 3 or 4 weeks after that
And even when he
surgery.
Does come back, yep. They're going to have to trust his word.
Yep.
That he's right to go.
Will they have to play him in the VFL first or not, Brian?
No, I don't think so.
Straight into the AFL.
Straight in. But that only comes if he let him down the other night, because he went into the game with that injury. Yeah. So the trust factor from those making the selection decisions has been eroded somewhat.
So then doesn't he have to play VFL then?
No, I think because they will be in a desperate need for him.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. He's not one that you'd put in the Magoos. Well, I wouldn't have thought.
The issue is, now that Ben Brown hurt his left knee, you called it Schwatter last night, looked very sore. Tried to warm back up on the bike, ran up and down the boundary line to come back on in the second half, but no dice. North Mel, he's having scans now. North are hoping it's more a cartilage issue than a ligament issue. Worst case scenario, maybe
it's a cartilage issue. He's done for 4.
Yeah, an arthroscope. I mean, you came back in 1 week, yep. I remember, Brian, but...
he's done for 4.
Well, yeah, for an arthroscope?
Well,
depends
on 2 to 4, depending on how much they take or whether they sew it back in.
That's right. And, yeah. Depends on the severity of it.
By the way, Brad Scott had this to say about the injuries.
We thought we could probably get a bit of an advantage there with our big guys, and Brownie started really well. But, you know, they lost a player early too, so I don't think on balance it was the difference.
Any early indication of how bad the injury?
With Brownie, I mean, they're cautiously optimistic, but I don't try and speculate on that. I'll just wait and see.
He's a good player, Brownie. Sucks up at the footy and presents well, and allows Petrie to sit back a little if he wants. I mean, they're all basically present up players, Waite, Brown, and Petrie to a certain degree. But when Petrie becomes the focus, I reckon it's tough for them. Nothing against Drew, but I reckon he needs help.
He was a great pick, Ben Brown. I think 40-something, almost maybe nearly 50. You know what this makes Magic Dore, fellas?
Oh,
the most important player at North Melbourne now.
Okay. Say that again.
He makes Magic Dore the most important player at North
Melbourne. Who's going to go
because
first?
Can we bold that? Put because, it in red and highlight it.
Did you watch him play last night? You were the most just
this,
in that next
this
room.
Is what I'm saying. Watched him play this last is what night? I'm saying. So he was average at best probably last night. Unless he has an impact as a second key forward line through North Melbourne. Because you know what you're going to get from Drew Petrie?
Simon Black, is he?
He hasn't got the
Simon
tank
Black.
Or the skill.
Aaron Black.
Aaron Black. Is Aaron he Black. I said Simon Black. Yeah. Aaron Black. Is
Wouldn't
he injured?
Wouldn't mind Simon Black.
Is he injured?
Oh, no. He's been in the VFL for...
Can't get a game.
He's
been
the
injured
guy
recently.
2 years ago, BT.
Pony.
That I look... Yeah, Pony. Where's the number 35? So,
mini
smaller
horse.
Version of the horse. Mini horse. John Longmire, of course, who used to wear that number. He was showing signs athletically and as a natural footballer. And all of a sudden now, he is just...
Jay-Z, you can't say that about Mad Jack because...
Why?
Because... You've got to,
he's hugely important.
No, but he's just a young player. Young players under 20 games, right? Young in football years, I'm talking. Under 20 games, wouldn't have played more than 20, would he?
No.
Wouldn't have played, probably wouldn't have played 10, right?
No, 21. Played, I think he's so played about 17.
Right. They are still finding their way. They don't even have a sense of belonging yet. So you can't think that he is going to make any difference.
Yes,
he
is his moment.
A bonus if he plays and plays well. You cannot put any heavy weight on his shoulders to be the impact player because he's not capable of that yet.
He
put
a line. Can take he six in a game, didn't he?
We'll put a line through North Melbourne. He dominates the VFL. This is his opportunity over the next 3 weeks to have a genuine influence. The Goldstein is sore, so he needs to ruck, have an impact there, and then provide a genuine target
he's
forward
not,
half.
So he's
you know what you're going to get from Petrie.
He's not capable of
Well, then put a line through them then.
Number one, he's not fit enough.
Then put a line
through them. Did you see last night?
Then put a line through them.
It was his 21st game last night.
Yep. He's not fit enough
take
to do that.
He takes a spectacular mark and kicks the odd goal, and on a rare day, he's had a day out. But if you watch Mad Jack closely, and this is not to be critical of the kid, but his football IQ, his ability to get his timing right, get to the right positions, have an impact, still has a lot of work involved. And that's why I think you can't expect Mad Jack Dore to have that type of influence.
He's got treated as a young player that's playing his first 20 games.
Six
years. Know when to lead, know when to get out of a space, all of those things that you spoke about.
So you're coaching Mad Jack Dore for the next 3 weeks. What do you say to him, Duck?
Well, I personally, I think you're
have
right.
Have regular spells on the bench.
No, I think you're right in that he's got to be there to support Goldstein. I think that's the big thing.
The
because
rough,
if Goldstein is sore, and I think, to be honest, that's where he plays his best footy in when he's playing VFL as
that's
well.
That's probably the simplest task for him.
That's right.
It?
When he's getting around the ground and, you know, he gets to stoppages and he's a big body and his follow-up work can be quite good and he can make a space for the players around him. So I think that's his position rather than parking forward. But, you know, I agree. He's 40 IQ. He's got a lot of work to do on that. And his fitness has improved. And you know, Swatter's right. He's dominating at times in the VFL.
Yeah.
But it's a big jump.
It's
in terms of long-term injuries, North Melbourne stack up pretty well in comparison to the rest of the clubs. I don't think they've got... Have they got anyone that's out for the season?
Jacobs is close to coming back. McDonald's
Higgins.
Close
no,
to coming
Higgins.
Back.
Have they got anyone that's missed the season?
Because
I think last night their opponents, the Dogs, have five.
Yeah.
That are missing for the season.
Mason Wood's been missing as well. They're getting players back. The cavalry is about to arrive. They've got to get to the finals first now. I mean, who are they going to play? Who are they playing in the next three games?
Hawthorne, Sydney, GWS. Yeah.
Well, how many of them are they going to win?
None.
Very tough.
They might not make the finals.
I think Porter got to win
they fall in.
Last three.
Yep. They fall in.
Just a bit of brotherly advice, Jay. Don't check Twitter for about the next 24 hours because your Mad Jack Dore most important comment has been posted by someone up the back.
Well, the point of that is if he has the chance to have a huge impact and be the difference for them in the forward half and in the ruck because Goldie is absolutely labouring.
Yeah, they've got four that are out for the season, the Western Bulldogs, confirming that. I thought there was five, but there's four.
What about Bontempelli? If we can touch on him for a second, does it still work in modern day football the rough stuff. You go the knuckle, you rough him up, you scrimmage him. We saw Ferrito go to him.
He doesn't strike me as a player that would respond in any negative manner, Marcus Bontempelli. He seems a pretty composed
kid. He responded last night by coming forward at Ferrito and giving it back to him.
Exactly. But I reckon you've got to really be careful as to who you pick, because you need to pick somebody who might be a bit of a hothead and who might fly off the handle and get distracted with regards to perhaps some retaliation. I don't see that in Marcus Bontempelli.
Well, let's listen to what the coach, Luke Beveridge, said about him, because it was pretty strong.
Marcus is a standout stalwart in there, and there's no doubt that the Kangaroos, like everyone will think, if we stop Marcus Bontempelli, we have a chance to stop their midfield. But he's made of pretty special substances, Marcus, and his teammates will always support him. I can imagine that that's going to happen over, you know, week to week, regardless of who's out of our side. And he's just got enormous courage and he's enormous character. So, loved his game.
That's a big rap, isn't it, from his coach and what it says. And I think Luke got one thing wrong there. And that is, if he responds after getting attention and plays well, they'll stop doing it. They won't try the roughed up tactics because there are certain players, BT, that you do that to, and they actually get stronger. They get more determined.
I mean, you can boil it down if you want to equate it to your own family at home. Swatter, how many kids you got?
Three.
You would approach each of them differently if you had a bit of a intervention issue?
Yes.
Wouldn't you?
Yes.
And it's the same with players. You've got to be careful who you pick, I reckon.
There was,
because if you pick the duck at full flight, you put a three on your chin before.
There was an incident last week, I reckon it was, against the Cats, where Bontempelli tackled Selwood and held him on the ground. Yes. BT, you remember that? And stood over him and sort of half roughed him up. And I hadn't seen that side to Bontempelli. It's almost like he's going, okay, he's growing. You know, he's captained the side a few times this year, Swatter.
Yep.
He's confident.
It's a little sign, isn't
it? Yeah, he's confident in his and that little bit of natural aggression in the right manner and, you know, in the right spirit of the game, he's got. And you're right. For a number of reasons, not just because of the you know, obviously he's a very good player. That's why they think they can target him. But you soon realise that, you know, some players love that and they respond to that. Other players go into their shell and they don't. And you know, this isn't having a go at Goldstein, because he is carrying an injury. But Port Adelaide targeted him a few weeks ago, a couple of times before the game and then at half time. They thought if we target him and we get into his head, then we beat North. That's exactly how they went about doing it a few weeks ago. So North thought Bontempelli didn't work.
Did you actually see last night? It was interesting to see Nicky Dell, who's related to Bontempelli, isn't he?
Yes.
That when there was that bit of push and shove going on for Ferrito, Nicky Dell was getting in the middle to put an end to it so that Bontempelli wasn't affected, but was virtually...
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, up here.
Well, save
Nick
some Del Sano
was in the middle of it, just trying to push the little... Is it cousin or nephew?
Where I did think it worked well was when the Kangaroos targeted Lewis and Hodge earlier this year against the Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think you
got
to be...
Bit of a stand?
Well, yeah, and it sort of got the response because the Hawks were unsettled for a fair part of that game. So I just think you got to be really careful. In the modern game, you don't often see it happen, perhaps 10 years ago.
I wouldn't be going to Hodge.
Yeah, but... It worked.
How did you respond? Who did it to you, Duck? And how did you respond? Did you like it? Did you thrive on that?
Yeah, the best way to respond to that attention is not retaliate in terms of giving a free kick away or be overly aggressive at times back. Best way to retaliate to that is actually play really, really good footy. And if it inspires you in that way and all of a sudden they go, hang on, this is the wrong... The teams look at that and go, this is the wrong way to... We don't want to upset this bloke. You don't want to poke the bear. And if you respond that way, that it stops happening.
And it works the same as a team. Yesterday, we saw some vision when we were doing the Saturday rub yesterday at the MCG. Some in-house monitor vision came of the Hawthorn players in the room. And there were a few smiles and there were a few happy with themselves and they're walking around having a good time. And we actually made the comment at the time that, you wouldn't want to go in with a soft frame of mind, a gentle frame of mind. Otherwise, these could knock you over. And I was the same. If I went into a game of footy with a soft frame of mind and just tried to be nice, I was no good. I much preferred someone to slap me around and become more aggressive. It just made me more competitive.
Yeah, so if someone did that to you, so you prepared for that mentally, and then if someone then added to that on the ground,
beautiful,
you went to another level.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think we can give Bonty a big tick last night. Yeah.
And it was very impressive the way he handled it all, I've got to say. Now, I think we're speaking with Nate Jones. Very successful day yesterday, Jay-Z.
Massive day for Melbourne.
It was indeed. A huge day. One of their best wins for a long, long time. Nathan Jones joins us on the line. Congratulations. Well done, Nathan.
Yeah, thanks, boys. It's always good to wake up on a Sunday after a win, that's for sure.
Hey, Jonesy, it must be good to go out on a Saturday afternoon now and know that you've got a lot of support through the midfield. I mean, that's been one of Hawthorn's great strengths. They can throw a lot of players through the middle of the ground, and that's exactly what you guys did yesterday. You've got a lot of depth through that area now.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I think that's one area that we've been trying to improve. Duck, it's we've got a lot of young boys in there. We've also added some experience, obviously, with Bernie, and maybe you could consider Dom Tyson, who had a couple of years at the level as well. But these younger guys are starting to come on, and we saw Clayton Oliver, Angus Brayshaw, Christian Petrarca in there yesterday, and that's been a real key for us, is to get, you know, sort of 10, 12 guys that can go through there, so we're not too reliant on too few, and it's definitely been helping us. So it's an area that I think Ruzy identified when he first came on board that we were really lacking in, and it's taken a little bit of time, but now we're starting to see a really strong group of players in that area in particular.
Hey, just on young Oliver, tough boy, and I reckon he's done Cyril a favour by being tough, because I reckon anyone else might have been in a little bit of trouble, but he got hit and just got straight up. He's a tough kid.
Mate, he's as hard as a cat's head, really. He's a country lad. Just obviously we love. He's super talented, particularly around the stoppages. But yesterday I don't reckon I've seen many blokes be hit that flush. And Cyril's not one you want to, run into. And he got Clary Oliver very well yesterday. But credit to him, he jumped straight back up and actually got in Cyril's grill later in the game. So, he's willing to, cop it and also give it back. And, that's something that that hard edge is something, we probably really respect Hawthorn for and admire them for. And that's why they've been so great. And it's hopefully something that, we can build into our game. And with guys like Clayton and young players that are, willing to play the game right on the line, it's exciting to be a part of that.
And Brayshaw as well too, Jonesy. We like that competitiveness. Now, I watched you sing the song last night, and I reckon it was the song of the year. It was just such a passionate moment. You hadn't beaten Hawthorn in 2 years. You've never beaten Hawthorn, have you, in your entire career? I mean, you must have copped a lot of chatter from them over the journey. And how satisfying was that? Because it's a huge step in your development.
Yeah, no, it is massive. This year's my 11th season. I think in my first year at the club, early in the year, I wasn't actually playing. I was in the VFL, and I think they might have won. I think that was the last time. So back in 2006. So, I've never personally played in a win. So, I reckon my losing margin against them wouldn't be great either. So, I've copped a fair bit of stick from them, but, they're a team that I've really admired and respected, and from where they've come from to obviously what they are now, particularly reigning three-time reigning premiers. So we're, as a young group, we were willing to get out there yesterday and try and challenge ourselves against the best, and we'd put up some great efforts, but we were sort of frustrated with not being able to get the job done on a few occasions this season. And yesterday we set ourselves to make sure we gave it our best shot, and if we found ourselves in a similar position that we did against them, earlier in the year, that we would be composed enough and have, learnt from our errors last time and make sure we capitalise, and that's what we did. And so it's always, as I said before, it's always good to be on the winners list after the weekend.
I've admired your leadership for a long time, Jonesy. You signed up at the club when it was absolutely on its knees, and I think they'll always remember and thank you for that. Is it payback time now for you and your teammates on a lot of these clubs who have beaten up on you for a long time? You sort of said before you've copped a lot of stick. Do those things stick in the back of your mind when you come out and you play Hawthorn?
I guess maybe personally for me, but, the refreshing thing is playing with a young group of players that actually have never experienced some of the things that, myself, Jack Watts, the guys that have been around a long time, Cole Garland, Lyndon Dunn, these guys that have, been a part of that. None of these guys, they play with so much freedom, and they're just fresh and, you know, they just want to get in there and have a go and you know, make a fist of their careers, which is really refreshing for, you know, someone like me that's been around a while. And although I only being 28, I feel like I've got a lot of footy ahead of me. You know, I am the more senior player there along with Bernie Vince, and, you know, I think it's up to us, you know, with our time sort of running out, if you look at it that way. So we're trying to push these young guys to develop as quick as they can, and so we can be a part of, you know, some strong and sustained success, not just sort of, you know, flash in the pan. And, you know, that's what we're trying to build. And, you know, it's still sort of a long way to go in our journey to reach where we want to get to. But, you know, I think the foundations are in place now. And hopefully off the back of yesterday's result, it really proves to our group that, you know, we're capable and we're good enough. And it's just finding that consistency week in, week out to challenge, you know, the best and play at our best.
Jonesy, I could. There's genuine excitement about this group, and I watched your game yesterday. I could ask you 30 questions, and believe me, that's not normally the case. but there's so much excitement around this group. I you know, Jack Watts in his year, and now all of a sudden he doesn't fumble. He kicks the big goals. He's involved in big moments. I thought he was very good again yesterday. Max Gawn was absolutely brilliant. Jack Viney, 38 possessions, equal PB for him yesterday. Are you prepared to anoint him as the next skipper of the footy club? He seems the obvious one for me in the middle of the ground. Do you think that'll be the case?
Oh, yeah. I think at this stage, I don't think there's, you know, any real doubt about that in terms of his qualities. And obviously, he plays the game exactly how you'd want, you know, a leader to play the game. And, you know, he's got some terrific attributes and he's really developing in that leadership space. You know, in the end, you know, you've also got to remember he's only, you know, 22 years old, I think. So, you know, he's still got a lot of growth left in him. And, you know, there is some great stories, as you mentioned, Gawney and Watsy, just to name a couple. And, you know, obviously the development that's, you know, in front of everyone's eyes with those younger players that keep coming through and keep delivering. It's an exciting time to be down there. And, you know, it's, for me, I'm really proud and honoured to be able to lead these guys because, you know, every day you get something out of them. They're all willing to improve. They've got terrific attitudes. And I think, you know, it's the strength of the team, which we've been pushing over a long period of time. And I think now we've got the foundations of that in place and players are willing to play their role and sacrifice for the team. And in the end, you know, it makes everyone, you know, walk taller and play better. And, you know, if you can play your part in, you know, an 18-man role and you know, execute on the day, you know, the accolades will come. And, you know, we're all about, you know, putting the team first, and I feel like that's what we've got a group doing at the moment. And it's great to, you know, put those sacrifices forward and get results on the weekend. It just proves that, you know, what we're doing is working.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned him, Nathan. Maxi Gawn, saw him rip the Cats apart last year down at Simmons Stadium. And Duck mentioned, I think, in his opening questioning about the depth that you've now got in your midfield. But that's all being underpinned by the year that Big Maxi's having. I mean, the footy he's playing at the consistent level week by week is a very high level.
Oh, it's unbelievable, to be honest. I think when he's on, particularly his contested marking, it's a thing of beauty. It's one thing that I actually can't do. I just wish I could take a big pack mark, but seeing him do it just gives me such a great thrill. And yesterday he couldn't have had stickier mitts, really. I think he may have taken something ridiculous in contested marks, but he's obviously the barometer for us. He's such a huge personality, but, you know, I think the growth in, you know, his career from, you know, where he started and then two knee recos and to where he is now, you know, my personal opinion, best ruckman in the competition. But, you know, he's obviously a key player for us. He's a real leader for us. And he's going to be, you know, pushing this club along with a few of the other names you mentioned right into the future. And, you know, I think he loves being in that position as well, which is, he's really grown into that, and you know, I think he feeds off that, and you know, we love him for it. And when he's at his best, he's very hard to beat.
I'm an unabashed fan of Big Maxi. He strikes me as a bit of a loose cat. Is he a bloke that's always serious on the ground, or is he cat cracking a few gags during a game just to lighten the moment up?
Yeah, he does do that a bit. He doesn't mind a little bit of chit chat here and there. It, you know, he's I think as he's got a lot more confident, know, it's starting to really come. I see him,
you might
know,
have to pull him in a bit.
Yeah, there's a bit of verbal going on here and there when he's lining up in the centre bounce, and I get a good chuckle. You know, only a few weeks ago, he threw a little bit of verbal at the umpire as well when he stuffed up the bounce, and he I think he fisted it away. So, no, he's a rare unit. He's he enjoys being different, but we love him for that. And you know, he's big beard and he's larger than life character. But they're the guys that you love playing with, and you know, I wouldn't choose anyone else in the competition to run out behind and have tapping the ball down my throat and down the other midfielders' throats, because you know, as I said before, when he's on, he's pretty unreal to watch.
What was he saying, Jonesy, when he was absolutely killing it yesterday?
I don't want to give away too much, but I think he just winds up the other ruckman. I think, you know, Hawthorn had a couple of tactics yesterday, obviously with Segler and McAvoy trying to run big Maxi around and run him ragged, but unfortunately that didn't work for him, so I think he was just giving him a little bit of an earful about that.
Nice work, Nate. Appreciate your time. Congratulations on the great form that Melbourne are showing.
Yeah, thanks, boys. Thanks for having me.
Nathan Jones with us on Triple M Footy. Interesting, not interesting, sad news about the Whale Roberts passing away. Premiership player with the Tigers as well. You would have been down to the pub in South Melbourne, have an ale with the Whale, Duck, wouldn't you? Swatter?
Whale Roberts, a long time ago, Brian.
Well, yeah. Many premierships were celebrated in that pub. Cricketers Arms, I think it was called, down there in South Melbourne, which Whale ran for years and years and years. And I reckon just about every premiership team during the 70s and 80s, probably in the week of celebrations.
Cricketers Arms, is that the one on Clarendon?
Would have gone. It's on Clarendon, yeah.
Yeah, it's now called the Coppersmith.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's been renovated and renamed. But it was the Cricketers, you're right. I had been there.
Surrounding buildings as well. We see the retirement of Andrew Walker during the week. What did you make of that, and what's to come, do you think?
Well, I think there's going to be some more news on that front, Brian, because I can tell you that Michael Jamieson, key defender, absolute stalwart backman for the club, provided great leadership through some pretty difficult times for the Carlton Footy Club, is expected to retire. Could happen as early as this week. Only played the 5 games this year. I think he's about 30 years old.
So what's been wrong with him? Has he been injured? Or
he has had some injury issues and a few other sort of personal things as well.
Okay.
He's contracted for next season, but I think him and the club will come to an agreement there. And he'll finish up, Duck. And he's, what would you describe, he's been an honest player for the Carlton Football Club. Yeah, he's stood up for them in pretty hard times, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe him. I think he's been honest and dour and at times been undersized and at times had to carry that defence on his own shoulders. So I think he could, if that was to be the case, he could retire knowing that he gave his all and had a very good career.
Brisbane, absolute debacle. What was it, 138 points, I think, yesterday. Let's, before we get stuck into this, have a listen to their coach, Justin Lepich.
And I would have thought it's pretty simple when you look at the side we have out there. It's boys against men. I mean, you know, we're probably half our team shouldn't be playing. Out there, reserves lost by the same figure today as well, with about 8 players running around in the reserve. So we don't even have replacements to bring in. We've got young kids just looking for that finish line. I think we have about 6-5 first-year players in today. Probably a third of our best team aren't playing. So they can't even see a little bit of light for our young boys as well. We've been given nothing as a footy club. We haven't. No extra concessions in money, people. Look, and GWS bought Heathshaw and Mumford with the extra concessions they got with cash. You've got to understand there's a system behind what you see on there on game day. You all play Supercoach, you know what, how to play it, but it's different, it's on a big scale, and you get more concessions and some don't. So that's the off-field that can help you on the on-field.
Gee, that's extraordinary.
What's all that about? Have you ever heard a more flat, depressing press conference than that? Because when he said there aren't even any, what, there's no light for our young players, or not even our young players would see the light or something like that, is there any doubt in anyone's mind that he'll be removed as Brisbane coach at the end of the season? I know you've been a big supporter of senior coaches, Duck, and you don't necessarily like this chat, I don't think, but he, to me, seems to be an absolute certainty to go now.
Well, look, it's always going to be tough when you finish a year off like this, and they will reassess it. He'll obviously coach the year out. It's funny you say that. And off air today, we had a chat about who would be the next
who's
coach
the waiting? Like, who's
in,
there?
In waiting.
Because that would weigh on the mind of those.
And I said to you, that I thought Brett Ratten was the best coach in waiting, given that he's already been in charge of a senior team. He didn't have a bad record at the Blues and didn't have a lot of players to work with. And now he's done the apprenticeship under Alistair Clarkson. And we've seen what coaches have done that have been under him for a little while. Beveridge is one of those at the Bulldogs. So he is now, I think he's the standout candidate. And I've just got a text through from my man right before we started discussing
this.
This
is your man.
Source.
Saying, really, oh, don't talk to me about sources. Seriously. But what I will say is my information man I'll call him Info Man now. My Info Man has just texted me and he believes good authority that Ratten Brisbane maybe next year. So maybe, given that my info man, maybe that they've had a couple of chats with Brett already. Who knows?
Well, one thing about that.
Who knows? And by the way, this is my opinion is if they were to look at another coach, Brisbane, I'm not saying that Leppa's going to be gone. I'm saying if they were to look at someone, I believe Brett Ratten is the best man for that job.
What about, Brian, the fact that Greg Swan, Brisbane CEO, we know him well, we really like him, sacked Brett Ratten when he was at Carlton? Is that at all a factor?
Look, I don't think so. Too much water's gone under the bridge.
Yeah, and I just think that, you know, coaches, there's not a lot of opportunities. There's going to be maybe one job available this year at the most.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a coach in waiting, you don't really have many choices if you want to get into the system this year.
So, Rats should take it?
So, you should take it. Anyone that gets offered a job probably should take it, unless you're in the position of Alistair Clarkson, where you can pick and choose a little, and there aren't many coaches that can do that, probably a handful or less. You just take what you can get. Because the opportunity may not present again. You know, if you're prepared to wait another year, who knows? A couple of jobs could open up next year. But there's not a lot of... I wouldn't have thought a lot of depth in the coaching. I reckon we've sucked the depth out of the coaching ranks in the last 3-4 years with so many appointments, and good ones they've been, like Beveridge and all of these guys, that we're waiting for the next crop to come through, I reckon.
Who are you hearing? Any names, Jay-Z?
There's a bit of talk that's come throughout the footy industry probably in the last 72 hours that their first port of call would be the Scott twins. Scott from North Melbourne and Chris Scott from Geelong.
And how long have they
just re-signed Brad Scott?
Yep. Right. That you would ask those clubs and they would laugh at that, their own clubs. But Brisbane has got to get the best coach that they would have to knock on the door of the fellas that are even signed up and stitched up just to ask them the question.
It's interesting, though.
You don't start from the bottom of the list, do you, Schwarter?
No.
Isn't that the issue that I think Brisbane, and once again, I want to reiterate that...
A lot of past champions.
Yes. I want to reiterate that, you know, Leppa's the coach there now. But if they were to look for one, then why do they keep, you know, throwing up past players of their club?
Brisbane guys.
Yeah, Brisbane guys. I mean, you just mentioned the Scott boys, and obviously Vossi and Leppa. Like, look outside the square.
If you're after the best person, you've got to look beyond players that have played for your own club. I'll give you four names.
Go on.
Michael Voss, James Hurd, Nathan Buckley and Matthew Promise. All greats of their respective clubs that went back to coach. Hasn't worked out well for three of them, and maybe a fourth in the future, who knows. So I think footy clubs need to quickly start to grow up and think, well, if there is a former great that has the credentials and the experience and the skill set, then we talk to him.
I thought we'd got outside that former great thing. It used to be a thing of the 80s and 90s, but I thought we'd passed it by, but I don't think we have.
But Brian, can Brisbane have an untried coach? Can they appoint, you know, a Danny Sexton?
Yeah, they could, if they've got a young... They could appoint who they perceive as the best development coach in the competition.
That's why Brett Ratten.
If Alan Richardson were available today, he would be perfect for someone like that. Such a good developer of young guys. You know, yeah, absolutely.
That's why I reckon Brett Ratten's the best choice.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Been in charge.
Can you think of anyone else? I mean, we don't know them all these young coaches, because they are such a new crop that have come in to assist. But
Blakey, Jew, Tudor, Carousella, Harvey is highly rated at Collingwood. But
So they are really the next lot, aren't they?
Yep.
You know, and
they do the Division 4
level
coaching.
Four, yep.
None of those guys are ahead of Ratten.
Yeah.
So but, you're really strong on this.
I just think he's the absolute standout, obvious person.
You know, though, with the significance of the Queensland market, you don't need just a development coach or a coach. You need somebody who's a great ambassador, who's got some experience and an ability to not only do the stuff during the week, do the stuff during the game, but also promote the club and the game in Queensland as well. And I think the other thing, Jay-Z, is I don't see just getting rid of Justin Lepich, and I'm not advocating for that, but I don't see just getting rid of this coach and getting a new coach as being the panacea for fixing everything.
I think it's a lot bigger than that.
Absolutely.
Could it disappear?
The club?
Yeah.
I think like Melbourne 3 years ago.
Or the AFL going to protect against that?
The AFL are going up there and we're going to get it right. So it's a bit of a clean slate situation. They pump more millions of dollars, another $5 million, get the training base
but,
right.
Hang on, but they've gone and recruited, some perceive, the best CEO in the competition, Greg Swan, up there to do that. So what, hasn't he been able to do it?
Well, he went up there and the joint was $13 million in debt, and the team was a basket case. And the coaching selection, which Lee Matthews oversaw, you know, maybe hasn't worked out for them.
Swatter and I have just got simultaneous messages.
Don't you love technology?
Throwing up the name.
It's not bad, actually,
throwing
either.
Up the name what, Paul, so Paul Ruse.
You've both got an info man.
No, this is a different info man.
I reckon Ruse is... I reckon he's had enough.
Yep.
I reckon Ruse...
Hawaii.
Yeah, I know the money plays a part and all that sort of thing, but I reckon he's mentally not in the coaching.
Geez, a nice sit-up.
Temperature at Queensland is almost on par with Hawaii.
Beach. What about this? Sitting in a media box next to either of you guys.
Hey, we look after it.
You know, Channel 7 or Fox Footy or somewhere like that with the same, you know, roughly the same sort of spondula. That'd be easy, wouldn't it?
I reckon the AFL would like Paul Ruse to consider perhaps just putting the retirement on hold for another 2 or 3 years stint.
There's no doubt that...
It'd be then called Mr. I'd call him Mr. Fix It.
Yeah. He just goes into dogs. What's his name?
Over the next 2 years, we'll be ringing Paul Ruse to try and get him to change his mind.
Well, because the AFL is going up there and pumping all this money in, their appointments will be conditional. Gil McLaughlin will be over Swanee's right hand side. So, right, we're giving you $5 million and sponsoring your training base. We need to know, we need to tick off every one of your appointments from here on in. Simon Black, the assistant coach, is gone. So, whatever.
Where's he gone?
He's to the, going to continue his Simon Black Academy. He was assistant coach. Probably he hasn't worked out quite that well. And now he's off to head up his own academy.
Surely, the coaching subcommittee at least puts a call through to Ruse, irrespective of the response.
You would have to put a call through. What about Bomber Thompson?
And then on top of that, you'd have the AFL who'd be sitting there saying, you've got to go and talk to Paul Ruse as well, wouldn't they?
What about Bomber Thompson?
I'll tell you what, this discussion, I'm glad people are listening
because Info Man
says most certainly not Ruse. He's got on good authority, will definitely not be coaching. So you're right. Yeah. I think he would be.
I think he's got umbrellas.
But another one here, an ex-teammate of ours, Schwatter, that won 3 premierships. Anthony Rock, who is currently over in Fremantle. So his name has just been... And thrown up as well.
And Peter Sumich, I believe, won't be at Fremantle next year either.
Why is that?
Well, if you go back to tell me something I don't know, that may have been discussed at about round 6.
You've had a couple of good ones, Schwatter.
Yeah, had a couple. Throw enough darts, eventually a couple of stick, Jay.
So what was that one again?
Which one?
The one you just said.
Rocky.
Rocky?
Yeah.
Has he got the temperament to become a senior coach?
He's mellowed.
What do you mean, got the temperament? No, well, I know that he coached...
He was feisty.
He coached... so was Alistair Clarkson.
Yes, and, good point.
There's been plenty of... Most of the coaches, you'd say Lee Matthews was feisty.
Yeah.
The Scott twins, feisty.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Yeah. So, I think that Rocky coached 3 premierships, 2 in the EDFL, 1 for... who was it?
Mitchum or something.
No. It's a college.
Vermont.
I can't think of it now. Off the top of my head. But three flags. Rocky's done a similar type apprenticeship as Beveridge. He's gone back to a local...
And Clarko did the same.
Yeah, and Clarko did the same. So he's gone back and coached at a way lower level, but coached teams that were nowhere. They weren't necessarily the best teams, BT, and he won premierships with them. So,
speaking of coaches, Jay-Z, is it true that Richmond have told their assistant coaches that they can't guarantee them?
They all have. They have to let them know on the 1st of August.
I know, but they came out and said that, but they couldn't let them know, Jay-Z, is all they've told them, didn't they? They didn't say that they were fired. They just said they couldn't let them know.
Couldn't guarantee
their
future next year, which I think is responsible management. Let's them sort out another option if they need it.
Hey, Tigers, good win on Friday night, Jay-Z. But there are some people thinking that perhaps the way forward for Richmond may be to put Alex Rance on the table. Surely not.
Well, there's a bit of talk around at the moment, Schwatter, that if Michael Hurley leaves Essendon, and we know that Essendon are entertaining the prospect of trading off their first round pick, that the Bombers could offer up that top pick for Richmond's Alex Rance. I say again, that's if Michael Hurley goes, Essendon could make a play for Alex Rance. Now, he was absolutely brilliant on Friday night. Duck, I saw that you gave him the watch for the best on-ground player.
Tissot, man of the match.
Would you do that? If you were on the Richmond side of the fence, and if you were an Essendon fan, would you do that deal?
Clearly, if you're any other club other than Richmond, you would want Alex Rance. He's arguably the best player in the competition. You can build a team around Alex Rance.
Not Danger?
They're different. You build a team around a key position player, not a midfielder. And he's the best defender in the game at the moment. He's brilliant. He's not going anywhere. Is he underpaid? Absolutely. I think he should. He's worth $1 million. And I don't know whether there's ever been a defender paid $1 million, but he should be.
So if you're Essendon, would you be throwing that lure
out there? If you were any club, you'd be throwing the kitchen sink at Alex Rance, but I'm not sure you'll get him.
Mm. Is he the best defender in the game, Schwatter?
Undoubtedly. He's an unbelievable player. Fantastic. I don't think anybody, from a defensive point of view or playing in the defensive end in the competition, has the ability to know when to leave his man and get his timing absolutely right.
The amount of, you know how we watch Cyril and we're astounded at the 14, 15 possessions and the couple of goals, but it's what he does without the footy. Mm. The amount of times Rance gets a fingernail, toenail, elbow, forehead to the ball to just stop a goal is just incredible. He stops and negates his teammates' opponents time and time again.
So if you were, just one last one, if you were playing on him, Duck, say tomorrow, what would be your approach on him? How do you work over Alex Rance? Do you take him deep? Do you get up the ground? Do you try and run him around? Do you get him above his head? How would you try and play him, do you think?
I think that's what makes him such a great defender. I think he's really good below his knees. He's desperate. He's really good above his head. Knows when to spoil, knows when to mark, knows when to leave, knows when to stay. So it's an interesting one. You'd obviously have to try everything. And it may very well be, if you think you can get him in the strength, then you take him deep and maybe just you be dangerous all the time. Don't allow him. You can't allow him to sag off to affect other contests. That's the most important thing. Make Alex play on you. So that's number one. He has to defend you. And if he's defending you, he can't help his teammates because that's what makes him great.
And I reckon the other thing, it's not so much if Duck was to be playing on Alex Rance, you need a very good disposer of the ball. And I mean a kicker who can actually kick it to the right spot for a player like Duck or a marquee forward, where you're eliminating as many of the abilities or angles that Alex Rance can spoil the ball. So if Alex Rance is playing on Duck's right shoulder, the kick has to go to Duck's left-hand side and it can't sit up. It's got to hit that sweet spot
flat,
so that allows Duck to position himself to take the mark, and that eliminates as many of the options that Alex Rance has got. And I think that's the other half to the equation. You see Alex Rance do these amazing things, but what's the quality of the ball coming in from up the ground that makes that forward's job a lot harder against Alex Rance?
Just one very quick last one, Duck. Is he in Glenn Jakovich territory?
Different. He's got some work to do. Glenn Jakovich, two-time premiership player, four-time best and fairest winner in their strongest era one of their strongest eras. So an absolute superstar. And they're actually quite different. I wrote an article about him this year comparing him to Glenn Archer. His desperation and the way he goes about his physicality and everything else is Archer-like. So that's how highly I rate him.
All right, we're going to take a break shortly. Before we do that, though, let's go down to this man. He is a big contributor for Triple M Footy, has been for a long time. That's all thanks to Bob Jane Tima. It's Mickey Roberts, and you have the Cats Director of Coaching with you, Simon Lloyd. Robbo, take it away.
I do, and Lloydie, before we even get into the game, I spoke to Matthew, brother of, and last night he was telling me a few little stories. Now, we've got Wayne Carey, Wayne Swass, Jay-Z, and Brian Taylor, the Bristle, up in the box. Now, a bit light-hearted, but he reckons that Bristle headbutted you once when Paran versus Williamstown knocked you out. I'm all getting this from BT and Matthew. I just want to set the record straight.
How are you, gents? Yeah. This has just been thrown at me. I think the headbutt was aimed at me. It hit David Ackley at that time, and I think BT came up and he was thrashing around, and it was a scary moment, probably one of the scariest moments in my life.
Lord, you were schizo. Yeah. You were schizo. Like, yeah. Not like you're a little bit like the Velvet Sledgehammer. You've got a little bit of velvet about you.
Yeah, it ran for a couple of years, didn't it, BT? We had to bury the hatchet at one stage, and we've moved on.
No, we did. I ended up burying you. So.
Yeah, it was a cheap one, BT. It was a cheap one.
So do we go percentage? The other argument we're having in the box too is you throw all the structure out and you go hell for leather and get as much percentage as you can, or do you surely you try and win the game with your structure?
Oh, look, we're not going to throw everything out. We'll play the way that we want to play, and it's one of those traps where it is, as Scotty mentioned, that elephant in the room, and we have spoken about percentage, but the best way to do that is to defend well and force turnovers and score off turnovers. So that'll be purely the focus today, and we're tinkering with a lot of things, and our VFL team is playing very, very well. So there's jostling for positions, and Scotty Selwood, I just walked out with him, and he's really excited to be out here, and a big day for him, and he's been out for a long period of time, so it's really exciting.
What impression has he made on you, Lloydie? I speak of Scott Selwood.
Yeah, look, he's highly professional. He's obviously left a quality club and held leadership positions. I just said to him, I said, look, don't be afraid to. He knows the structures better than anyone at the club, and I said, don't be afraid to organise everyone out there today. And but he's just highly professional, and he's very, very driven.
Hey, Lloydie, we were talking as Robbo just said about how important percentage is, but let's be honest, it's been these games that you've struggled in this year, sides that you should beat and beat well, you just haven't.
Yeah, Wayne, we've just gone away from things, the way we've played, and and you do at times. We've got players that like playing in big games, and you're in trouble in this game if you breathe out and exhale, and that's what's tended to happen. So, but it's one of those things now where we've hopefully learned from it in those games. And the games that we did play against, those teams were up and they were coming after us. So the Saints were very, very good, as were Collingwood and Carlton, those games. But still, we've really gone through that. And, you do get caught up looking at who's playing who and, reliant on, well, how much do we need to win by? But all of a sudden, you need to check yourself and just get back on what do we need to focus on and just focus on what we can control.
Hey, Simon, Tommy Hawkins is starting to find some good form. How important has it been for Tom to try and work his way back into some good form to have a handy foil in Daniel Menzel?
Yeah, look, Tom has worked really, really hard, and he had some periods of the season this year where he wasn't at where he needed to be, and you can see on the track the last 3 or 4 weeks how hard he is working, and it just converts to the way he plays. This week on the training track, I watched him the other day going one-on-one against Lockie Henderson, and he was just looking so strong, and he's up and about, and so hopefully he's timed it really right, and Daniel Menzel's played some really good footy here at Etihad as well, so hopefully we see that today. But that's the nature of it at the moment. What's happening is players realise that sort of no one's quite safe at the moment within the team, and that's really healthy, and we're lucky we've got the luxury of that at the moment with injuries.
Simon, has Paddy Dangerfield been playing forward a bit more over the past month just to sort of take some of the load off him a little bit? It's a long season. He says he doesn't want to miss any games or rest any games this year. Are you just trying to take the heat and the load off him a little bit by playing more inside 50?
Yeah, we actually haven't spoken about it in regards to load. I think it's around just a different dynamic, and we're trying to be as flexible as we can be as a team, and because teams plan for different things you'll throw at them. And I think, yeah, with Patrick, he's so strong one-on-one and at ground and in the air, and we're trying to isolate at different times. And, you know, at some stage as well, I'd like to see Joel Selwood down there close to Tom. And so we're just trying to, you know, get as many things right as we can. And we've got flexibility there where, you know, Cam Guthrie's played some really good footy at half-back as well as inside mid. So there's... We're just trying to really try and make sure that we get it right and hit it at the right time come finals.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good point that Jay-Z makes there. You want to, I mean, the fact that he's so dynamic in the middle of the ground, you don't want to lose that. But at the same time, your Caddies and your Duncans and these guys, you need those guys to be in really good form come finals time, because you can't just rely on Paddy in there. You've got to be able to throw that around. You've got to be flexible.
Yeah, and you're spot on. Against Frio over in the West, they were coming at us at one stage and the game hadn't quite broken open, and we decided during the break to start Paddy for the first, you know, 6 minutes forward, and the ball hadn't gone into the forward line, and you're looking at Paddy in the forward line and they were battling. It was in their forward half, and, yeah, we just had to hold our nerve to just help the others grow and, you know, work themselves into the game.
Appreciate you joining us today, Simon. Good luck.
Thanks, James. Have a good call.
Poor crowd in here at the moment at Etihad Stadium. Expect to build a little bit late. I think the forecast crowd is about 25,000 to 30,000 here today. Not sure whether they will get that, although both these teams, as we know, big drawers, and perhaps they'll arrive a little late. A few stray bombers out there having a bit of a pre-warm-up at the moment, Jay-Z.
Geelong fans don't usually... Are they good travellers?
Well, they don't all come from Geelong, Jay-Z. I don't know whether you're aware that Victoria's a big place and there are Geelong Caddy supporters all over the place. Quite a few of them in Melbourne, I would have thought, given the fact they play a few games at the G.
It's true.
And it is just over the bridge, mate. It's like a kilometre away, the bridge.
Just asking the question.
Yeah. All right. Now, you've spoken about Rants during the break. Interesting to hear Duck's comments, and I think I'm with you. But you built a club around Rants, so we've done that. Travis Cloak.
Mm.
What do you think is going to... what should happen to Travis Cloak, do you reckon, Duck?
I think it probably would be a win-win for both if, you know, a fresh start, revitalise Trav and, you know, fresh ideas, you know, fresh players, new players in and around him, different game style. All of those things might be the thing that he needs as a footballer and might be the very thing that, you know, that particular club that he goes to needs. And if Collingwood can get some value for him, then... It's a win-win for everyone, and that's all you really want. You just want him to be, you want him to be happy. You want him to be playing footy and doing what he loves doing, I guess. That's what you wish for anyone.
So do you think he's got good footy left in him, Trav, or do you think he just needs a fresh start?
I think it's a risk. It'd be a risk. Whoever took him, it's a risk to wonder and know whether you could get him back to anywhere near his best form. He hasn't produced that for well over, maybe 2 years now. Well, it's coming up 2 years that he... has produced some quality, consistent footy. So it's a risk for someone to do it. Is he worth that risk? I believe he probably is for a club that's desperate for a big forward.
He dropped off the edge of the cliff there a bit. It makes me believe that it wasn't so much a form thing as to maybe a...
mental.
Division of views between he and the way the coach is wanting to play.
It's a confidence plays a massive part. And if he's lost confidence in their confidence in him, BT, and therefore, you know, the connect between then his players from there, and maybe they're not looking for him as much. They've lost confidence. Darcy Moore's now the main target when he plays.
Yep.
And all of those different, for all those different reasons, then, you know, I think a fresh start would be good for him.
So, BT, you, from looking from afar, you think that they might not be on the same page there.
Just think something's happened there, because it happened so suddenly that he went from good to no good almost overnight. And I'm thinking, gee, what's all that about? How can that just drop off like that? I'm not sure what it is. He was such a great runner. He had a huge tank. He looked like he was prepared to do the defensive things. I could understand if I'm looking for a reason as to why Bucks would have said, hang on a minute, you're not doing this part of the game, so we need you to... And he just hasn't obeyed, but I don't think that is evident.
I think one of the things that you hear from Collingwood, and once again, outsider looking in, but speak to people within the club, there are a lot of little things that good players and great players do to make them great.
So preparation, you mean?
And it's the little things. It's the getting down there, doing the extra sessions, doing the extra ground ball stuff. You know, getting around stoppages, not being one-dimensional. you know, working on those aspects of your game. If your flexibility has gone a little bit, BT, doing yoga, doing things that all of these other players, out even outside the club, BT, do to improve their body, their flexibility and other things. And I'm led to believe that those things weren't as important to him, and they're the things that the people at the club believe that, you know, are the reason for some of that form.
We spoke to Ben Reid, was it last week, and he spoke about the importance of a lot of that sort of that new emphasis in the Collingwood strength and conditioning department with the ballet stuff and the flexibility, as you said, Duck. You
reckon you put a bit of emphasis on goal kicking.
I reckon you're spot on there. So instead that begs the question:
Could it happen? Could it happen? A clean swap? Could this be a possibility?
Go on.
My info man has just popped up.
Go on
with some more info. Could it be, I'm talking like BT now, could it be Vickery to Collingwood, Cloak to Richmond?
I wouldn't rule that out. Yep.
Just a clean swap, BT.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. You're getting the young against the older, though, aren't you? That's the only difference. But other than that...
Well, yeah. Tyrone's in the same spot. He needs to change.
You are both performing. You'd say Cloak's still performing better than Vickery, and Cloak's a two-time All-Australian player. Vickery's neither of those, so that and so that counters your youth thing, so that could be a pretty good swap.
Vickery is a free agent though, so he does come for nothing. Collingwood would get him for nothing. Who else do you think would be in the market for a Travis Cloak?
Oh, Fremantle would, I think, throw their hat into the ring.
How would he go on the big ground over there with the running?
Well, he's got a good tank.
He's got a great tank. Yeah,
he can run.
No problems at all, Jay-Z.
The Bulldogs. Well, last night they played Zane Cordy at centre half forward. It's Cordy and Boyd.
Mate,
the Bulldogs next year could have, take Redpath out of it because that's a 12-month injury. But if you're going on what the new style of footy, BT, Cremery, Stringer, Boyd, with another pre-season under their belt, that's three pronged. Well, Cremery back into that team really complements Stringer because they're similar. So they're similar types. They're good on the deck. They're quick. They're athletic. They're all of that. Then you add the big target in Boyd. And then, you know, your ruckman floating forward at times too. It's an unusual hard team to match up on. So I'm not sure Cloak would fit into that.
Not many of these deals come off, Jay-Z. I know you and your paper like to talk about them at this time of the year because, well, you know, you like to talk about them.
Very good trade, James Gwilt. Not a trade, it was a pickup, wasn't it? Was it for a free agent from St Kilda to Essendon? That worked well.
Well, he's our guest and he's coming up on the other side of the break live in the commentary box. Our next guest is live in the commentary box. Here he is from the Bombers, of course, formerly a Saint, as we watched that game as well. James Gwilt joins us. Welcome to you, James. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us, boys.
Just before we speak with James, the St Kilda getting the job done, Jay-Z.
Easy, 61 points over the Blues, yep. Brian.
Knee, how is it?
Yeah, pretty good. Had an arthroscope 2 weeks ago. So I'll be touch and go. I might be running out a bit of time.
So how old are you now?
29.
29. Yep. And have you got any guarantees for next year?
No, not at this stage,
right.
No.
When are you expecting to talk with them?
I think quite a few of the boys are in my situation, so probably trying to get Hurls and Hibbo and all that sort of
see
first,
where
I
that
reckon.
Sits
yeah.
first, yeah. Yep.
So if you send Hurls and Hibbo a text and just say, boys, by any chance, can you let me know what you're doing?
Yeah, in danger, yeah. No, I think they're enjoying themselves over in Europe, so, yeah.
When do they get back?
I think late August, mid-August, maybe. Yeah, I'm not too sure.
And you think your future will genuinely hinge on what Michael Hurley and Michael Hibbert are doing? I mean, Hurley's the same position.
Yeah, probably. I would have thought. Yeah, yep, yeah.
So it wouldn't be that disappointing if they
No, obviously. Yeah, obviously want to play with the best, and I'm really good mates with Hibbo and Hurl, so, yeah, obviously still want to keep playing with
them. It'd be nice for those guys to come back and you actually play on opponents that are your size and weight,
yeah,
rather than playing above your weight and height, which you've
fair
had
position,
to, which you've had to do all of this year. And you've, I tell you what, you've stood up pretty well. So I think you've had a really solid year. Given that, I would think that they would want you to go on.
Yeah, well, it's obviously been a tough year. A few of the young boys have done really well. Hearts and that, he's stepped up really well, and obviously he's got a big job tonight on Tommy Hawkins, but I've enjoyed the year, and though we've obviously lost a lot of games, but still enjoying sort of leading with the young boys and that sort of stuff. So yeah.
What's been the biggest challenge you've had as a group to overcome week by week, given the circumstances you've found yourself in?
probably, I reckon, middle way through the year, and we got a bit of a hiding against Freo. And then we had to back up a six-day break against Hawthorn on the Friday night. That was probably the toughest couple of weeks we've had because there was a few boys that were pretty fatigued and middle of the year. And, yeah, coming off that Freo long trip to Perth. So that Hawthorn game was, yeah, we got belted. So that was a pretty tough couple of weeks. But I think other than them two sort of games, the past sort of month has been okay. Our pressure and stuff has been all right. So hopefully tonight we can especially help out the defenders because they've got some good forwards.
Who has been the toughest opponent that you've played on this year, given that you've played, you know, above your weight and height?
Toughest opponent. To be honest, I reckon Jack Gunston's been toughest opponent I've had because he's so good aerially. On the ground, he's terrific as well, and he's got that great agility and speed off the mark as well, so he's probably been my toughest opponent.
Is there any chance you tell him to stop leading? Like, apparently, I think Bob Murphy one day called him the thoroughbred, just because he kept going side to side, kept running.
Yeah,
At any point, do you sort of say, listen, Jack, do us a favour here, mate?
I actually said that to Rui when we played them. I said, mate, can you just give us a bit of a spell? But I was absolutely cooked, yeah.
Hey, what's how important has John Worsfold been for the group this year?
Yeah, he's brought a lot of calmness and positivity to the group. Obviously understands the situation and sort of the inexperience and the top-up boys that have come in. So he's been pretty simple with his game plan, and our training from week to week hasn't really differed too much. So he's brought a lot of calmness to the group, so he's been great.
What about the facility at Essendon just out there, just out the Tuller, a couple of minutes, as distinct from having to go, you know, south?
Yep.
Where you used to have
Seaford,
to go.
Yep.
Seaford, it's just, how have you found that? What sort of facility is it?
Yeah, it's really top-notch. It's huge. Massive indoor, fake grassed area, massive gym, recovery pools and that are awesome. And we've got all the meeting rooms and stuff as well. So, yeah, two ovals. They've got the Etihad and then the MCG as well. Mm.
It's amazing. You've been out there, Jay-Z?
Yeah, lots of times. Mm. Very windy.
Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah, it's very windy.
Has McDonald Tipamudi surprised you in what he's been able to do this year in defence and then has gone forward? I think that it's been a great move by Woosha. He now knows that this kid can play at either end.
Yep.
Fantasia's another one.
I think Merritt's gone.
You mentioned Hartley before, but is McDonald Tipamudi surprised?
Not really, because I sort of saw him last year in the VFL and he was doing that. And even last year when I got to the club before pre-season started, I was sort of doing bits and pieces and he was always in there doing boxing and weights and kicking the footy and stuff. So I knew he had the passion to improve and get on the list.
Was it about his body? Did he have to lose a bit of puppy?
Yeah, I think he was eating too much turtle. So he was, he's got his running ability and the 2K time trials that we did, he was going really well. So he's improved heaps.
It's a danger in the summer months, the turtle.
Yeah,
they're a very dangerous little creature.
It's quite heavy in the wrong stuff. My man Sam Grimley is playing today. Just I think his third
pencil
game.
Yep.
Yeah. What do you call him?
Pencil.
Pencil, for obvious reasons. How's he going to go, do you reckon? Grimmo.
Yeah, well, he's a pretty confident fella, so hopefully he can take a few marks and sit on a few blokes' heads.
You understand he's got great heritage, so he had a dad that played VFL footy, and he had a grandfather that played VFL footy.
Yep.
You know, you got the history lines there.
He hasn't really told us much about that.
Yeah, so he had a grandfather, Kenny, that played for Fitzroy and was quite a good player, and then his dad, Brett, played for Fitzroy as well. He was bit of a hack, but
that's Grimmo, good, Brian. Yeah. Hey, Jimmy, tell us what it's been like in the locker room. You know, you've got your pests like Ryan Crowley and James Kelly, and your serious cats like BJ. How much have you enjoyed, despite the scoreboard stuff? You know, just being around these guys in the locker room. How buoyant have you been able to keep that mood?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. There's obviously, as you said, there's some good locker room banter with Crowley is a bit of a pest. Nathan Grimer is very active on the talk. He actually does our fines, so he's really good. Yeah.
What do you get fined for?
It can be anything. Kits, putting stuff on Instagram, just stupid stuff like that. Yeah. Hearts gets a lot of fines for his Instagram and Twitter posts.
What about Brendan Goddard? You obviously played with him at the Saints.
Yep.
Now he's your captain here. How have you seen his development and obviously as a leader as well?
Obviously at the Saints he had that, I guess that reputation has been a bit of a hothead on the ground. I think he's sort of mellowed out a little bit, even though the boys maybe think not. But coming from the Saints to now, his leadership's improved out of sight. And I think he's captained the club pretty well this year. Yeah,
how do you get him to calm down? Who's got the license to tell BJ to sit down?
No, most blokes do, yeah. Mainly the leadership group gives him a bit of feedback from time to time, yeah.
A spray back.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, James, good luck in your recovery and also penciling a new deal with the Bombers. We look forward to hearing about that in the next couple of weeks.
Thanks, guys.
Jay-Z, you're going to hit us with fast little bits and pieces, Jay-Z, that we haven't had time to discuss in full today, please.
Brian, the injury on Friday night to Collingwood captain Scott Pendlebury late in the piece was a bit of a concern, but he has been cleared of any bone breaks or major structural damage. So be surprised to see him playing this weekend against Friday night against the Bulldogs, although his recovery powers are extraordinary, hardly ever misses. I think it'd be an absolutely massive of him to get up on Friday night. They're very happy with the young boy, Rupert Mills, 191 centimetres, tough on baller.
Tackling machine.
Yeah, so he's one player who'll probably step straight into that void, but I think this might be one of those rare games that Pendles misses this week. He'll do his best. Well, there's been calls this week in the Herald Sun from former Fremantle coach Chris Connolly about the promotion relegation system. So splitting the league in half.
Yuck.
So there's a top five and then essentially a bottom four, and the players get teams get promoted and relegated each season. But
so destroy what we've built up.
Well, it's a concern because what players would want to play in the bottom division of nine teams? Like, who wants to, what sponsors want to be associated with the club?
What TV network wants to cover the second division?
What's driving the conversation?
Well, these late season games, Schwatter, there's some snooze fests.
You know
there's
what? We've had them every year.
Yeah.
For eternity.
Yeah. That's the case.
So why do we have to introduce something to try and facilitate something else? It is what it is. What we've had is a unique situation in the last 6 years because we've had two new teams brought into the competition.
I agree with that, Jay-Z. You need to think about what he's just said then and compute
keep
that.
Keep it the same.
and no, it's been going on for 100 years. Mm. That there's been winners and losers come this part of the year. And there have been many teams that can't make it. And that's just part of the raffle, mate.
The other argument to that is if you are playing sort of decent footy, although you're not playing finals, your supporters realise that, you know what, we've only got one or two more opportunities to watch you play. And like I said, as long as you're bringing effort, they get out and watch you,
so
knowing that it's a long
summer. Why is society in such a need that it's got to go, everything's got to go to the wire?
Well, they can structure the fixture so that these late season games can become more relevant, and there is
support. Not without changing the system, they can't. So that's a pretty big change.
There is great support at AFL HQ for the 17-5 fixture, and that is where everyone plays each other once. So you play 17 games, and then it is reset. And at that point, the ladder would be divided into three groups. Okay, top six, middle six, bottom six, and the top six play for top four positions, so the double chance. The middle six play for seventh and eighth spots, and the bottom six play each other for the top draft pick. Now, that is the one they can't get right at the moment amongst the top brass, because you've got a team in 12th who could get the top draft pick. And we know the teams that who fall to 12th, say it's a Port Adelaide or a team like Richmond, a team like that, versus a basket case like Brisbane, who desperately need that selection. Mm. So while Gil McLachlan and the team at the AFL like this because they can make these late season games more interesting, the bottom six is just very difficult to work out at the moment.
Just a propensity to want to change things all the time we have in this game.
Or try and fix it. It'll work itself out, Brian.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
Otherwise you sort of got these games. I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. You know, we play 15th versus 18th in round 22. Well,
what's wrong with that?
And Schwatter's fallen asleep in the corner because, you know, he doesn't care.
It's got some genuine merit.
Well, if next time we get Gil McLachlan in here, I'm sure he would say similar things to what I just did, because they're looking for more
relevance.
They
are looking at all the different ways to make our competition more fair. Yeah. More fair.
More rules.
And more fair, BT.
And remember, it was a good change that they changed the fixture so as that it's weighted. So you finish in the top six, next year's fixture you play more top six teams.
We can't have bottom six. We can't do what we've done this year, BT, where you've got sides playing one another twice within 6 weeks and then sides not crazy. Playing yeah, one another until late in the year. You know, that's
just
no,
a fixture.
What that is an that is an uneven competition.
They've got that right before.
It is an uneven competition.
No, it's uneven if you play more than 17 games.
Which is exactly what we're what we're trying to even up here.
But do you surprise me with your opinion here, because you are very much a key broadcasting man, and you know the television nuances of football as well as anyone. So don't you appreciate that when it does get to the late season and you're calling, you know, not a great game on a Friday night or a Saturday night. Like, don't you appreciate the fact that we need probably a bit more flexibility in the fixture?
I appreciate winners and losers, and I accept that for what it is. And I understand that the AFL have to pencil things in many, many months in advance to be able to organise things around it, so you can't change that. So it's hard to get that flexibility on a weekly basis on fixtures and slotting good games into Friday night all the time and not having Essendon play on a Friday night, for instance, et cetera, et cetera.
So you just cop it.
Just cop it. Just move on.
Do you think the bye spread over 3 weeks has contributed to the standard of football drop-off as well?
See, this is the thing. This is what they need to eliminate. Forget about the, you know, get rid of the two byes. We don't need the byes.
Do you reckon the players would support that?
And guess what? The players will adjust, because the fitness sports science freaks that are out there destroying our game will coach them accordingly. And they will make sure that they have got rest, etc. And they won't train them as hard and all that sort of thing. And, you know, they will adjust, just like they've adjusted with the game and the way it's gone forward. We don't need the breaks. You know, give the players a little bit more percentage points on their revenue, right?
More
in
bucks.
Exchange for no buys. The season has been drawn out an extra 2 weeks because of these buys. We don't need the season to be an extra 2 weeks long, just so some tired players have got time to recover.
We need to look after our stars, don't we, Duff?
I like your idea before, Jay-Z. I think, well, it's not your idea, but I like that theory. I like anything that is going to make our competition more even.
Adelaide.
And more fair, I mean, for every club.
Belted the Lions by 138 points last night, excuse me, and were 2 goals off their best score of all time. This team's offensive ability is seriously scary. And if they finish top two, Brian, will they go all the way? They're a grand final side if they finish top two. Adelaide over, first final
Adelaide
over.
You've got to preface that, though, by saying Brisbane are terrible.
Yeah.
So, it was a dominant performance. It was a solid performance, but...
And then throw in who they've lost to. North, Hawthorn, Dogs, Geelong.
So you don't think the Crows are a serious threat?
They've lost to top sides.
Should have beaten Hawthorn on that Friday night.
They have won the games they should win.
So where do you rank them?
Mostly.
They're equal premiership favourite.
I rank them at about fourth or fifth.
Can they go all the way, Duck?
Yep.
I think so. Yep. I think they've got the scoring power.
Yeah, no, totally. I think not only the scoring power, they've got the defence, the underrated defence, the run, and their use of the footy, BT. It's what we all talk about. They've got all of those attributes. I reckon that Friday night game with Adelaide and Hawthorn, which was earlier in the year, it was a long time ago. Adelaide was in very good form then, and that was a cracking, brilliant, skillful, attacking, daring, brave, courageous game of footy, BT. And Adelaide just lost that. Hawthorn pinched it. It was a ripper, and that could be a grand final review.
Time now for...
Are we doing this?
This is Wayne Carey's Duction.
Didn't I get any warning about that?
Dennis Pagan said that the 1998 North Melbourne team was better than the 1996 and 1999 teams. What do you think?
Well, we lost the grand final that year, but Schwatter wasn't in 98, so a better team. I don't know. That's his opinion. I haven't really studied it, to be honest.
Who ran the best footy trips in the competition? Starting to get towards that part of the season.
Who ran?
Which clubs were the
We were hard to beat, I reckon. only because we decided to go international.
Yes.
And very good destinations international.
We went international in 1983 or 4. We went to Mexico. And,
are you going to tell the full story?
Very exotic it's a very location. Good story. It was, and anyway, so because we got cheap airfares, $9.95 return, we didn't realise at the time that we were stopping in about 56 countries to get there on the way. And so by the time we got to LA, getting the boys across the 1 kilometre of the car park, 40 guys who had been on a plane for 65 hours, was just getting a little hard to handle. And then when he got over to Aero Mexico and the door on the plane wouldn't close.
Or the wing was taped on.
And the guy wired it up and said, we'll wire them in.
No.
And when we get to the other end, we'll snip it open for you. Right? So then we got on a bus. So then we've been travelling
trade, planes and automobile.
80 hours at this stage. To get to Mexico, and the guys are going off me saying, shit, what have you organised here? This is a disgrace. 80 hours, our footy trip's nearly over in time. Got on a bus in a little place called Manzanillo, and we got going, and we had about a four-hour drive, and the bus...
Four-hour drive?
And the bus driver was going pretty slow, so we revved him up to the point where he was just bloody like a maniac. The bus in front of us rolled over, and our bus driver just kept going straight past it. Didn't even stop, you know. And then we got to the Club Med thing there, and we got in the very first night, and I'm a young sort of organiser at this stage, pretty raw, and we'd spent a night in the nightclub there at the play, and they had a horse and cart chained to the stage, which is about 5 foot above the dance floor. And I looked up deep into the morning, and I saw what I thought were about six Richmond players on the horse. And they were heading our way, Doug. They were coming down, further down. And so I got called to the chief de village, his office, about 4 in the morning to explain, you know, why we'd... decided to jump on the horse in the car.
That's very funny.
But, oh, it was a funny trip getting there.
They're international destinations where I think we're one of the first to start that.
Right.
And it wasn't a democracy. It wasn't a vote, so to speak. It was, we're going here, and that's it. And everyone came, though.
Yep.
There was a few arguments about cost and things like that. And, and we sorted that out. And, everyone went.
It was all good, sort
of. Yeah, nice story too, Brian. I always enjoy yours. Yeah. The logjam, top eight teams, Duck. Will it mean that they won't rest players leading into the finals?
Well, you can't, Swatter. The only team that probably might have that liberty, although that has now dwindled, was Hawthorn. It's just, well, if you want to finish top two, you just can't do that. So, good point.
If you were Tom Rockliffe, would you be having a look around?
I think Tom, I don't think he owes Brisbane, but he's the captain of that footy club, and he's openly said, you know, but if he, at the end of the day, it's a personal decision, so I can't talk on behalf of Tom, really.
How would you score Melbourne under Paul Roos out of 10?
This year?
His journey.
His journey, 8. I reckon it's been a gradual build, and he leaves this footy club in a wonderful, wonderful spot for Simon Goodwin to take over, both on and off the ground.
If you were to score Brian's mood at the start of the show, what would you score that?
A 1. but it is built to a healthy 6.5.
We've
right
got
now.
Him back.
What about when you take into account reasoning?
For the reasons. It was a deserving one. You had a few things go wrong.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks football.